according to prophecy and promises of God, after 70 years, turned the captivity. Remember, that's an important time on Israel's timeline, that that they were in captivity for 70 years, and then God turned the captivity. God moved. It through the heart of the king, Cyrus of Persia, and through the hearts of a remnant, he stirred their hearts, and a remnant returned. We remember there were three returns from captivity. The first return was under a man called Zerubbabel, who led the remnant back to rebuild the temple. A couple of generations later, Ezra led a remnant back to restore the people. And then in his same generation, we have Nehemiah, who returned to rebuild the walls and also to bring a revival and a restoration to the people. So our focus is on the book of Nehemiah and this amazing story this morning. We remember that Nehemiah heard the news from Jerusalem. He heard the news that he was a cupbearer in the palace of Artaxerxes in Persia. He was about 1,000 miles east of Jerusalem, and as he was there in under the Persian dominion as in exile, he hears the news from Jerusalem. Do you remember what it was? That the walls were broken down, that the gates were burned, and that God's people were in shame and reproach. We learn much about Nehemiah's heart from his response when he heard about that precious city, the focus of God's plan and heart. He was moved to prayer, and he fasted, and he was mourning for 4 months because he heard that the walls were broken down and the gates were burned. When I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting before the God of heaven. We remember also in verse 11, he prays for the people, he prays for the city, he reminds God of his promises. He also prays, "Oh Lord, will you give me mercy in the sight of this man," speaking of the king, because Nehemiah knew he had to go before Artaxerxes and ask for authority and a blessing to go back and be used accordingly in Jerusalem. So he said, "Oh Lord, will you bless me in the sight of this man?" And we read in chapter 2, verse 1, "And it came to pass." Remember? 4 months of praying and fasting and mourning, and it came to pass. And in verse 4, we read these words. And the verse 4, yes. "And the king said to me, 'What do you request?'" There it is. That was the answer that Nehemiah had been waiting for. And finally, the king says, "What do you request?" Remember what Nehemiah asked for? First of all, he said that you would send me to Jerusalem. Secondly, that you will give me letters of authority for the governors of the region. Thirdly, that you will give me a letter to Asaph, who oversees the king's forest, that I will get timber to rebuild the walls and the gates. And then lastly, he says, and also that timber will be used for my house also. Nehemiah had been thinking and praying accordingly to what would happen when he would return. And verse 8, the king granted him according to the good hand of God upon him. And that brings us just about up to date, if you weren't here last week, that God's hand was on Nehemiah, and he sensed it, and he knew that it was God who turned the king's heart. It was God who turned the captivity. It was God who was setting the stage to use him and lead him to go back to the land. We remember, though, in verse 10, where we left off, we see the first mention of the enemies, Sanballat and Tobiah. We will know them by the end of the book quite well, for they return again and again. Sanballat was a governor of Samaria under the Persian rule, and Tobiah was also a Persian official over the Ammonite region. And there is extra biblical findings to verify the existence of these families, which is fascinating. You can look that up. But in verse 11, "So I came to Jerusalem and I was there 3 days." Now, notice in the NIV version, it says, "After staying there 3 days, I set out." The significance of this is it was a long journey. 1,000 miles from Susa to Jerusalem. It would have taken months maybe 3 or 4 months to take that journey. And when he arrived, he rested in Jerusalem for 3 days before doing anything else. And this is significant, isn't it? Because God, the Bible, places a great value on the need for rest, not jumping straight into the task. That would have been unwise. But he had to take the time to rest physically and to focus and prepare his heart and his mind. So he takes those 3 days after the journey. We read the same thing happened under Ezra when he returned. In Ezra 8:15, it says, "And now I gather them by the river, and we camp there for 3 days." And then in 8:32 of Ezra, "So we came to Jerusalem, and we stayed there 3 days." We see that pattern. We see the need for rest in the scriptures and in the Christian life. I've seen it in my experience in my life. I'm sure you have too, that even in the church, there can be people who are so striving, working so hard, and they become so burdened and so stressed that eventually they just burn out. And we would say, hey, time out, take a pause, take 3 days, take 3 months, take a seat, relax, receive, let God love you, let God edify you. Because it's my heart, and I'm sure all of our heart, that we don't want to see people burdened or stressed out in the labors or in the ministry, but that they would have a blessing. And when you see them ministering, you don't get the sense of, oh, why do I have to do this? But I can't believe I get to do this. A sense of privilege because grace is resting upon them. They are not striving in the flesh for a fair show, but they are ministering unto the Lord in his grace, and it's evident. So Nehemiah takes 3 days. We need to all sense our capacity and the balance of that. It doesn't mean I sit down for 3 years either. It means that there's a balance and I let God lead me. 2:12, the next verse. "And then I rose in the night and a few men with me." Oh, it's good to have a few men with you on the team, a good few men and women on the team, like-minded. It doesn't mean that they agree with everything you say, but you're one in spirit, you're united in the vision. There's a good place for healthy feedback, but we're on the same team, going in the same direction, and that's important. He says, "I told no one what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem." The beautiful words, we want to pluck some of them out. "I told no one." Think of that. He'd been praying all those months. God brought him to Jerusalem. He's rested, he's poised. He knows what's in his heart. He knows what has to be done and what he is going to be used to do. And yet he hasn't told anyone. Nobody knows yet. It's a secret. Notice, "I hadn't told anyone what God had put in my heart." In fact, I missed out a word there. "What my God had put in my heart." He could have easily said, "What the God of Israel had put in my heart," or "What the God of heaven had put in my heart." But "what my God had put in my heart." That tells us a lot about Nehemiah's faith, that he had a relationship with God, or God was personal to him. This is my God. Yes, the God of heaven. Yes, the God of Israel. But my God has put something in my heart. And that happens in Christianity, in our lives as believers, as brothers and sisters, as leaders, as visionaries, that God puts things in our heart according to his planning and his time. Oh, that's so wonderful. What has God put in our hearts? Let's pray that God puts things in our hearts to take us forward in his work. He says, "Nor was there any animal with me except the one on which I rode." So here he is, one man, few others with him, one animal, perhaps a donkey he is riding, and it's in the night. And he hasn't told anyone yet what he's doing. Just silhouetted in the night, riding around the walls, riding around the city. Seemingly harmless man. No, getting not much attention, all, but he is about to turn the tables. He is about to be used by God so greatly by God's grace and in God's plan. He doesn't have much, but he has a vision in his heart. He has something that God has put in his heart. And the power of a vision in the heart is amazing. For those of us who have studied church history, we see that. A vision, something that God puts in the heart at a certain time, at a certain place, and God breathes upon it, and amazing things happen. Now, it could easily be that Nehemiah could have talked his way out of it. You think that God has put things in people's hearts and yet they somehow rationalize it and justify it and shelve it and procrastinate and wait and rationalize, oh, I can't do it because. We all can't do it because. But where faith kicks in, oh, but by the grace of God, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. If God is calling us to a work, he will equip you for the work. He doesn't call the equipped, but he equips the called. That's the principle. Maybe the tools aren't you don't have the tools until you get there. And it takes some steps of faith to get there. And this is where faith must kick in our lives. We talk about faith. It's not something theoretical or impractical. It connects directly to our lives. And if God puts something in my heart, oh, let faith kick in and take steps of faith and go forwards. Don't limit yourself by yourself, but trust that God can give the increase. Now he's going to spy out the land. We look at this in verse 13 and 14. We're going to see that he's going to ride around the city, ride around the broken walls. He's going to view the broken walls and view the gates with the vision that God has put in his heart. He's going to be thinking and considering and praying. And three times in these verses, it says he goes out by night. He doesn't want anyone to see him. He doesn't want Sambalat to see him or Tobiah to see him or any enemies or anyone who might want to shoot it down before it begins. He just wants to have this quiet, private, prayerful reconnaissance mission around the city of Jerusalem alone. Verse 13, and I went out by night through the valley gate to the serpent well and the refuse gate, and I viewed the walls of Jerusalem which were broken down and its gates which were burned by fire. Viewed the walls, the word means to examine, to expect, to look at carefully. And what thoughts do you think Nehemiah had in his heart and in his mind that night as he rode around Jerusalem? Maybe he considered the history. Maybe he considered the promise according to the land and God's people. Maybe he considered the glory of Solomon's temple and then the terrible destruction under the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. Maybe then he considered how God turned in the heart of Cyrus and a remnant had returned and rebuilt the temple under Zerubbabel. Maybe he considered these things as he rode around the temple, around the walls. And certainly he considered this, how the walls would be rebuilt. For any one of us, or any visionary, has a capacity by faith to see things as if they are when they are not yet. That I believe that Nehemiah, as he rode around the walls, he could see them finished. He could see the gates restored. He had eyes and a heart of redemption, believing and knowing what God can do. And so must we have that heart in Christianity and in our local mission field, our local church, our evangelical church, wherever God has brought us to, that we must ride around the walls, so to speak, and imagine and have a vision and have faith and prayers and hands that would see God rebuild the walls. Nehemiah, by the way, couldn't rebuild the walls on his own, right? And the people weren't rebuilding the walls without Nehemiah or, but when God put that together and there was a stirring and a moving, something incredible happened. And then I went out to the fountain gate, to the king's pool, which, by the way, is the pool of Siloam in the New Testament where Jesus was ministering. There was no room for the animal under me to pass. So I went up in the night by the valley and viewed the wall, and I turned back and entered by the valley gate. And so I returned. So he's been around the city. Things are stirring in his heart. He's believing God. And notice verse 16. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done. Hey, where's Nehemiah? I don't know. His bed said, where? It's the middle of the night. What's happening? I don't know. What's he doing? I don't know. Did he tell you? He didn't tell me. And Nehemiah, none of the officials knew. Look at this. And I had not yet told the Jews or the priests or the nobles or the officials or the others who did the work. I wonder why. I don't know exactly, but I think there's a timing. There's a timing that you have vision quietly in your heart. You are praying. You're not telling anyone yet. And then you want to share it. There was a time for Nehemiah to be silent and to ride alone. And then there was a time to share the vision to the people. Verse 17. And then I said to them. Who is the them? It's the Jews and the priests and the nobles and the officials and the others who did the work. Then I said to them. You see the great distress that we, notice, not you. See the great distress you are in, but that we are in. How Jerusalem lies waste and its gates are burned with fire. Now, did they see that? Of course they did. They lived in Jerusalem. They were there in Jerusalem day in, day out. Of course they saw it. But they didn't see it like Nehemiah saw it. How easily the human heart becomes accustomed to ruin. Begins to settle for less, becomes familiar, begins to coast, and it's normal and it's okay. Oh, but then Nehemiah comes along and says, hey, do you see it? Why are you settling for this? Let's finish the job. Let's get it done. Hasn't God called us to a work? Hasn't God called us to something, whether it be in Jerusalem or Peace Haven or beyond? Hasn't God called us to something? We say, oh, we can build the walls. This is what Nehemiah said. And this is what has been happening in our church history locally here. And may it continue to happen as God works, as God puts things in our hearts and leads us forwards. Now, he suggests the way forward to them. He says, come, let us build the wall. And again, let us, not you. Hey, it's time for you to build the wall. No, let us build the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer be in reproach. So he suggests the way forward, but also he wants to be part of the solution. It's very easy to point out the error and say, hey, do you realize why isn't this happening? You guys should do that, right? Very easy for a critic to come out and shoot the wounded, but that's not the spirit here. How can we rebuild? What can we do? Let us go forwards, for God has called us to this great work. Verse 18, and I told them, and this is the key ingredient. Okay, listen, let me add the most important thing. It's not just about me and my idea. I'm little Nehemiah, the cupbearer from Persia. It's not just that I didn't think of this. And I'm not suggesting we do this by the strength of our own hands. But let me tell you the most important part. I told them of the hand of my God, which had been good upon me, and also of the king's words that he had spoken to me. And so, or therefore, because of that, they said, let us rise up to build. And they set their hands to this good work. Or some translations, they strengthened their hands for the work. They prepared their hearts. They rolled up their sleeves and says, okay, let me go. Where's the rubble? What's the next step? Let's go forward. You mean that God could use us? You mean that I could be a part of this work? Oh, come on, let's go. And when they heard that the good hand of God was upon Nehemiah and working to bring him back for such a divine appointment as this, they stirred up their heart, they set their hands to do this great work. You imagine there was all the rubble all around the city, the burnt gates and the broken down walls, just a memory of what once was, rubble everywhere. And so it is in missions. So it is in church ministry. So it is in the Great Commission. So it is in our lives and our stewardship as believers. There is rubble everywhere. There are broken lives everywhere. You just speak to someone on the street and you see that people are broken and wounded and lonely, and they share with you just a few little windows of their life, and you realize, wow, it is common to human experience. Trouble and strife and conflict and questions and searching and emptiness is rubble everywhere. And we have a calling to rebuild. How do we do that? How do we do that? We pray, we go, we speak, we believe God. We consider the opportunities, whether it's Sunday school or greeting people at the front door or small groups. I say, I don't know, what can I do? Be a part of it. Be faithful. Sign up as God leads you. You're free. But wow, let's go forward and see what God can do. Verse 19, and here we go again. This section closes just like the last one, with the serpent rearing his head once again. We see the enemies mentioned in verse 19. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab, oh, it adds one more to the list now. When they heard of it, they laughed at us and they despised us and they said, what is this thing that you are doing? Will you rebel against the king? These enemies were united against the work of God, against the plan of God. Remember at the end of chapter 1, it says they were grieved that there was someone who would come for the welfare of God's people. And here it says they laughed and they mocked. And listen, very commonly and traditionally, this is where the work can stop, right here, where the enemy, where there is intimidation, where there is negativity, where there is criticism that would come in and cut through the heart and the momentum and the vision. This is where the work can stop, where the enemy would love to breathe something in, question, negativity, or doubt. And you know what must happen? You must answer that from heaven. And that's what Nehemiah does in verse 20. And so I answered them, and I said to them, the God of heaven himself will prosper us. Therefore, we, his servants, will arise and build, but you have no heritage or right or memorial in Jerusalem. Oh, the authority from heaven that the people must have sensed in the words of this little cupbearer who would speak in such a way to those that would oppose the work of God. God of heaven himself. Don't you love that word? The God of heaven himself. This is his work, his mind, his vision, his heart, his purpose. And God from heaven himself will prosper us if and as we strengthen our hands for the work. Amen.